right, 807 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Friday. Is it a getaway Friday for you? That, you know, I'm looking through some of the text here. You asked the question last hour. Now, for a lot of us, yes, I saw a lot of y'all's text. Small business owners saying, we get Wednesday off if we get that. But for folks that have, you know, the vacation planned and all those kind of things, use it. Because, you know, when you do the vacation thing, you have the day that doesn't cost you, right? You have the Independence Day holiday, and then you attach at one end or the other, or maybe at both ends for some people, the vacation days to maximize
day. Especially when it's in the middle of the week.
So when Independence Day is on a Monday or Tuesday, not as big a deal, or a Friday, but when it's on a Wednesday, what's the play? I know. Some of y'all just take the entire summer off. But for other people, if you're going to take a day off, do you do it like, is it better to go, like, take Tuesday off and then Wednesday? For me, because we get up so early, it would be easier for me to take Thursday off so you could do the fireworks display.
Yeah, because you want to do the fun stuff that comes with Independence Day on, you know, the night of Independence Day.
Right, you would think. I don't know. So that's just one of our side columns there on the text line at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, as reported in headlines last hour, Maxine Waters cancels. I know you're heartbroken, but Maxine Waters cancels her trip to Alabama because of a death threat she received out of Texas, which, once again, not to make light, the death threat thing's not okay.
Mm-mm.
But why that means Alabama, I have to dig into that a little bit more. And also, speaking of national politics, we talked about this earlier in the week. Before they left, a contingent from Baldwin County headed to Washington to plead the case of Baldwin County in Washington. And it was made up of Tucker Dorsey, Baldwin County Commissioner, Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack, and Baldwin County Commissioner Chris Elliott, as they hopped on the plane and headed to Washington midweek. And Chris is joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
I'm not going to give... People want me to give y'all grief and ask why y'all flew out of Pensacola and not Mobile. But that, I do not want to start problems between the two counties. I don't have anything to do with that.
Move it to Berkeley. I'll fly out of Berkeley every time.
There you go. There's an endorsement. All right. So y'all headed up and kind of walk us through what that process... Who did you meet with Congressman Byrne? Did you meet with Senator Shelby? Who all did you meet with?
We sure did, and I will go ahead and say Congressman Byrne's staff and Congressman Byrne himself obviously were just instrumental, along with Senator Shelby, to make sure that we were in front of the right people to get our message across and sit with the decision makers. We had the opportunity to sit with Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, which is a pretty high-ranking fellow when it gets right down to it, who's in charge of all really the Navy installations and all the DOD installations in the country.
Wow.
And make our case as to why this field, I mean, let's call it what it is, these fields are completely inadequate for the purported use. And I think we got somewhere with him. The problem is we also got to get that message to the decision makers at HHS and DHS, that's Health and Human Services, and Department of Homeland Security, as effectively as we got it to him. But I really felt like it was very helpful, and it was helpful, according to Congressman Byrne and Senator Shelby, both, who we had the opportunity to meet with directly, that they saw local officials telling them about the local problems that we're experiencing with these facilities. Not an immigration debate, but the local, on-the-ground, empirical problems we had with these facilities.
Pragmatic argument versus an idealistic argument, something that, you know, you're making the argument that should be made from folks on the ground in Baldwin County versus somebody who's arguing bigger, you know, ideals, I guess, in Congress.
Well, you and I had that conversation last time, right?
I'm
a county commissioner. I'm not a congressman, you know?
Right.
I'm not setting federal policy, and I'm not going to try to. But I am going to tell them, hey, guys, we have hurricanes here in Baldwin County. And how is that going to impact your tent city that you're going to have to evacuate probably 7 to 8 times a year? See, we consider evacuations in Baldwin County. Commissioner Dorsey and Sheriff Mack and I consider evacuations in Baldwin County usually 2 to 3 times a summer during hurricane season. We get to look at Category 1 versus Category 2 storms. We get to start talking about those things several times a year, mainly because we've got to put things in motion in order to get those things done prior to ordering evacuations. These folks are intense. You're going to have to do that, you know, almost a dozen times, probably, because you're going to have to evacuate them for a tropical storm. And, oh, by the way, they didn't come with cars. right?
Yeah.
So you're going to have to mobilize the buses necessary to get them out of harm's way. You should have seen the eyes, you know, oh, wow. You know, we didn't think about that. And there's the argument that, hey, we in Baldwin County know this. You're darn right we know this in Baldwin County. But I can promise you, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense didn't think about that until we told him.
Commissioner, while you were in Washington, did you get any sense of a timeline of when a decision on where to house these illegal immigrants may come, that decision?
Absolutely, and that was one of the other things that was very beneficial, was having some really good conversations with decision makers about what was driving their decisions, what was driving their, you know, their need for our facility. And quite frankly, that was the flow of immigrants across the border. So what we got, and some of it was confidential, but it was how many spots they have currently, how many spots they have on deck to house these folks, and what do we expect coming across the border. So the short answer to your question is need. It's about how many immigrants are coming across the border, and that's what's going to drive the necessity of additional locations. Let's be clear about this. They are already setting up these types of facilities in other parts of the country. They're doing it right now. They just haven't gotten to us yet. And our hope was getting ahead of this, getting in early to point out the boots-on-the-ground issues with these two locations was going to be very helpful for us to get off the list, and then I want off the list permanently after that.
Yeah, I mean, you're having basically like dealing with an absentee landlord, somebody lives across the country, you know, in this case, Washington, to talk about that property. It kind of pull the curtain back for us, Chris, if you could. You go up there, you sit down, and you said you had the good meeting. They didn't realize it. You basically say, okay, here's a picture of where y'all are talking about, and here's why this doesn't work. I mean, or do they actually have, is there a list? They say, okay, well, we see you're line 23 on here or something like that. I mean, what is that like?
So basically what happens is DOD receives a request from DHS. So Department of Defense from Department of Homeland Security, identify facilities that you may be able to house these folks at. So DOD goes to work, pushes that out to their folks, all the branches, okay? Navy looks at OLF Silver Hill and OLF Wolf and Josephine and in Bell Forest and says, okay, we have these two facilities in Alabama. Pushes them back up. Thanks a lot, Navy. Anyway, so they push them back up to DOD. DOD sends those to DHS as available, and to HHS, Health and Human Services. HHS is really in charge of the kids. DHS is really in charge of the adults. And then DHS gets to be in charge of the family unit once we've reunited these families, and now we've got a whole family together. So it's a big bureaucratic, you know, process, as you might imagine. But in the middle of that, there's very little input on what's really there, what's really on the ground, and what some of the challenges might be. So we talked about everything from infrastructure challenges. There's no water. There's no sewer. There's no power. It's a two-lane road in and out. You're going to put 25,000. You're going to put the city of Daphne south of Bell Forest on a two-lane road. And, oh, by the way, it's 3,000 to 6,000 people that get to go work at this facility to take care of those people.
Wow.
So
wow.
Just drive that number up.
All right. And just joining us, talking to Baldwin County Commissioner Chris Elliott, part of a contingent that went to Washington this week to plead the case and open some eyes there on these proposed tent camps. Now, when you were there, we had talked, I guess, earlier in the week about this idea of maybe purchasing the property, the county or I don't know, you'll tell me, the entity trying to purchase those airfields from the federal government. Did you make an offer while you were there? Did you write something down, slide a piece of paper across to him, or what happened?
I looked the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense right in the eye, and I said, listen, you're not using these facilities. You're not going to use these facilities. They're not adjacent to any branch or any base that you may be expanding later on, and I'd like to buy them from you. Let's talk. And he kind of smiled at me. He said, we could do that. So I think that's something they're willing and open to do. And I can't tell you enough about our congressional delegation. Congressman Byrne and Senator Shelby have got more clout. Alabama is so lucky to have those two where they are, because they can really get things done for us, or in this instance, help us stop things from getting done.
Yeah, I mean, I think we scored it the other day that Senator Shelby is the fourth most powerful person on planet Earth. So being head of appropriations, and that leaves me, I don't want to, you know, leave the other senator out. I asked this question earlier in the week. I hadn't heard anything. Did y'all meet with Senator Jones? Has he made any comment on this?
his comment that I saw, we did not meet with Senator Jones. We're a little pressed for time, and we felt like it was more important to meet with administration officials than it was. We felt like we covered the Senate side of it with the chairman of the Senate Appropriations.
Right, right. You're the big dog. Yes.
And it was important to get to the administration folks and then, frankly, get back to Baldwin County to, you know, do what we needed to do. But Senator Jones's comments were, oh, this isn't going to happen. You know, oh, don't worry about it. And I hear that, but I think that's the wrong approach. I think the right approach is get in front of it, make sure that the decision makers understand the challenges. And it was clear from our meetings that they didn't. They just didn't. DOD has a habit, and it's a good habit to have, and that is we can do anything we want to. We fought a war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and their infrastructure challenge is there, right? They overcame them, no question. There were water, sewer, power, exactly. But when you start talking about, and the key word is natural hazards for them, when you start talking about natural hazards, that's a hurricane in our neck of the woods. That's what gets their attention. When they take responsibility for all of these families, these kids, and frankly, these illegal immigrants, when they take responsibility for them, that means they've got to clothe them, house them, feed them, they've got to teach them, and frankly, they are required to provide areas for them to recreate. But it also means they have to keep them safe. And that means probably transporting them out of our area 6 to 12 times a year when a storm even enters the Gulf. Because remember, they're not living in houses. They're living in tents. We had a thunderstorm yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It would have blown the whole place away.
Well put. Well put. All right. Keep us in the loop on what happens with this as we move forward.
I will do so. Our protectbaldwin.com petition has got well over 6,000 signatures, headed to 7,000. That was incredibly beneficial to take that to D.C. to show folks. So if you could make sure your listeners know, protectbaldwin.com, sign the signature, and help me fight this.
All right. We'll post it up again on our social media pages. Baldwin County Commissioner Chris Elliott, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Sean.
819 FM Talk 106.5. We'll talk to you when we get back at 343-0106. 343-0106. By the way, like Chris just said, and we talked about with Dr. Bill, that was a heck of a thunderstorm show. Very different from your regular run-of-the-mill afternoon thunderstorms in the summer. Well, I'll get into that with Dr. Bill coming up.
Thank you, Kane. 824 on FM Talk 106.5. And this segment of Mobile Mornings brought to you by LinkedIn. If you're a business owner, well, you don't need me to tell you that the right or the wrong hire can have a huge impact on your business. You really want to make the right hire. So that's why it's crucial that you make sure your job post reaches as many qualified candidates as you can. You could try posting on some of those other job boards, but if you do that, do you know who will see that posting? When you post your job on LinkedIn, it reaches 70% of the U.S. workforce. And unlike those job boards, LinkedIn is a community that career-focused people visit every day to grow professionally and explore new job opportunities. LinkedIn Jobs intelligently targets candidates based on their skills, their recommendations, even how open they are to new opportunities like yours. Insights that are only available on the LinkedIn network. The result is that your post is matched to the best people for the job. It's probably why a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn. And right now, if you go to LinkedIn.com/WAVH, they'll give you a $50 credit toward your first job post. That's LinkedIn.com/WAVH for your $50 credit. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, you're closer than you think.
All right, 825 FM Talk 106.5. I know we're covering it in our national newscast, but I also discussed the murders yesterday of people at the newspaper there in Annapolis, Maryland. We could do a couple things here. Number one, let's do what's most important. And I obviously know the guy's name. That's been published. We make a habit of not giving those names, so we'll just leave it at that. But I'd like to point out the victims. Let's point out the human beings that were killed yesterday while they were there doing their job. And by the way, too, the folks there at the Capitol, Capitol Journal, is it the Capitol? Yeah, they put out a paper today.
Yeah.
That's, I think, like all, most people, no matter what you do for a living, just went, that's awesome. Inside the journalism world, inside media, people in media all stopped and said, wow, Duly impressed.
Yeah, and they were saying it yesterday as while news was still rolling in, while even before you knew the names of some of the victims, you had people that worked there in Annapolis at that newspaper saying, I think one of the men quoted on his Twitter, he said, "You better believe we're putting out a damn paper tomorrow."
Yeah, that was also really, really something. Huh? But let's talk about the victims. Rob Hyacin, 59 years old. Former feature writer for the Baltimore Sun, who had joined the Capital Gazette in 2010 as assistant editor and columnist. Wendy Winters, 65, a community correspondent for this paper. Just picture this, you know, these people. Just picture, you know, people that work at a, even though Annapolis is obviously close to D.C., you still have, and close to Baltimore, obviously, you have a kind of a small town feel. You have somebody doing community correspondent work. You know, I mean, that kind of paper is what we're talking about. Wendy Winter, 65, community correspondent who headed special publications. Gerald Fishman, 61, the editorial page editor. John McNamara, 56, staff writer who covered high school, college, and professional sports for decades. The kind of stuff you read right here at home. We're talking about a prep sports report. That kind of, he's reporting that, I'm sure. You know, the high school in Baltimore taking on the high school over here. That's the kind of story this man was writing. He was gunned down yesterday. Murdered. And by the way, yeah, and John McNamara, I saw something, somebody put it on Twitter, that he had written a couple books, I guess, about the about Maryland Terrapins, I think. He'd written, yeah, like some like go-to books for people that are big Terps fans.
And three of those victims graduated from the University of Maryland.
There you go. He was 56. Rebecca Smith, 34, sales assistant. In other words, somebody in our world, you have on air and you have sales, and sales, 34 years old, dead. Now, that's the first part. That's the first thing I want to point out and to think about those people.
And also, yeah. When they put the paper out this morning, the opinion page, they actually left blank. They said, It only said, "Today we are speechless," and listed the names of the five victims. That was all that was on their editorial page this morning.
That's all they needed to put on their editorial page. The other part of this is, as we this will go at some point, I'm sure. I've not heard it yet, but I'm sure this will somehow get wrapped up in a discussion. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Wrapped up in a gun control discussion. But this dirtbag used a shotgun. Okay, so I'm sure they'll try to figure out what I don't know what they'll say because it's a shotgun. But I mean, not to give ammunition, and I don't mean the pun, but to give people who want to fight against this anything to stand on. But a lot of shotguns are semi-automatic, the same way the AR-15 is semi-automatic. Semi-automatic is not a look. Semi-automatic is a function. Mm-hmm. There's lots of guns that we're using in the outdoors and all that are semi-automatic. You know, and I don't know what shotgun. It could have been a pump. It could have been, variety. But, it would be interesting to see if the attack comes out because the gun doesn't look like they think it should look and this kind of thing, if that'll come out. But I want to point out, too, that part of this discussion for me, and this is not, I'm not a person who, like when people say they would back something that would arm teachers in schools, and I say, I don't want to force anybody to arm themselves. I want to give the option if a teacher wants to, if they're a concealed carry permit holder and wants to do it and wants to keep themselves and do that, that's one thing. So I'm not, on this case, not telling anybody to arm themselves. You do what you want, do what you're, because it's a very, very big responsibility that it, my goodness, is not for everybody. But law enforcement there in Annapolis reacted within 90 seconds, minute and a half. Awesome, yeah. Response time.
Saved
for law enforcement.
So many lives.
Awesome response time. Still five dead. Once again, I am celebrating law enforcement in Annapolis. 90-second response. Amazing. Still five dead. So those who would say, you can't, people couldn't have guns in a workplace, and why should people be able to conceal carry and all that? You know, we just wait for the authorities. Authorities did a great job in response, and still five people murdered by a dirtbag. So take your calls on that when we get back as well at 343-0106, 343-0106.
They got a million toys at Toys R Us that I can play with. I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. They got the best for so much less. You really flip your lid.
That hey, kids, you got to grow up because they shut it down today.
Mm,
yeah, Toys R Us. That's it for Jeffrey the Giraffe and the big box stores full of kids' dreams.
It's okay, Sean.
Yeah, okay. So, and I do have a running conspiracy theory, which you can back me up. It's now been picked up by a conspiracy theory Twitter feed.
Yeah, you started it and they'll finish it.
That's right. They're going to spread it all over. I'm not sure. Just questions. I just have questions. And, you know, questions about giraffes.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit. Can you go over your theory one more time here?
Right. I just briefly here. It was just a situation that I noticed timelines, mm-hmm. right? And are these connected? If you remember the viral sensation of April the Giraffe giving birth, everybody mm-hmm. waiting for April the Giraffe to give birth to the I guess you'd be a calf. What's a baby giraffe?
Oh, yeah. Caught that. Not a Joey.
Right. No, I think it'd be a calf. But
this was a year ago last April.
Right.
Fitting with the name.
Think about what happened then. That went viral. It was not but weeks after that that we started getting the first rumblings out of Wall Street and elsewhere that, that things were not looking good for Toys R Us.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it's just there's not enough room in this world for two famous giraffes.
No.
And April the Giraffe took all the fame, and it was time for Jeffrey to pack his bags. Because you said there's a picture out this morning of Jeffrey in an empty Toys R Us with a suitcase packed.
That's right. A picture that went viral yesterday on social media showed Jeffrey the Giraffe standing in a Toys R Us that was completely emptied on its shelves. Not a single toy in sight. And Jeffrey standing there waving at the camera, holding a bag of luggage that presumably he'll go stay in a motel
for a few
nights.
Or a van down by the river. That's probably where Jeffrey's going to be living, in a van down by the river. After April, you know.
It probably was. I mean, April even put out some campaign-style attack ads after that, going after Jeffrey.
So just think about it. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying. You know, I'll act like the person that always tells me this. I am not a conspiracy theorist.
Mm.
But in this case, April the Giraffe shows up for internet fame, and it's not long after before Toys R Us starts talking about shuttering their stores and going out of business.
I really think you're onto something there.
Thank you.
Let me add a second conspiracy here. Is it possible that Toys R Us has just become another Amazon.com victim? That people that used to go out, I remember when I was a kid, and my grandma would give me the holiday, the gifts mm-hmm. were coming up on, mm-hmm. usually Christmas mm-hmm. and birthdays, mm-hmm. and she'd give me that, and it would come with this little sticker book, and it was basically the first emojis. It had different stickers for how much you wanted that toy, and you would pick
You would score the toy.
Yes, okay. And then depending on Granny's finances, I would get one of those toys that I put a sticker by, but it was a yearly thing, and Toys R Us is where they would get the gifts.
Right.
Now I think Amazon has replaced Toys R Us in that department.
Yeah, so that's probably more logical. But let me get back to. I think it's about giraffes, like Daniel said over on the text line or on the on Twitter. He says, "Is it possible that there was a paternity suit that broke him? That Jeffrey may actually have been the sire to that baby giraffe that was born from April, and that he just lost it all. That he lost all his money, and that's why Toys R Us had to be liquidated.
I hope he at least gets weekends."
Yeah. Every other weekend for Jeffrey. Also, speaking of the Amazon thing, though, you mentioned that. What was the story this morning? Amazon getting in the pharmacy business?
Yeah, Amazon. And, of course, we've seen them kind of work their way into many different, you know, avenues of business, starting with when they bought that Whole Foods store and started getting into the grocery business. Well, now they have bought into a online pharmacy. And, of course, people are wondering if they're getting into they're disrupting healthcare by getting into this,
right.
But is it too much? Is Amazon taking on too much? They bought the online pharmaceutical startup called PillPack, and says here in this article, the acquisition sent standard brick-and-mortar pharmacy stock prices plunging, signaled a potentially huge disruption in the United States healthcare market. They haven't disclosed the deal, the terms of the deal yet, but they said the acquisition went for just under $1 billion. So you know that Amazon is going to, it isn't just something they're going to buy and bury. They are getting into the pharmaceutical business.
Yeah, and it's also part of this discussion is a feature we did on, I think, the Midday Show, maybe a month or so ago, and we interviewed a woman who wrote a story, I think, with the Wall Street Journal about the number of restaurants that are now having their food, either they're configuring themselves for a third-party delivery service, or they never delivered before and now they're delivering because that's the demand of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could argue it's, you know, it depends on who you're asking on a given day. Does that mean, you know, is it busy Americans or lazy Americans? I don't know. But if you, even as convenient as drive-through pharmacies are and all that stuff, that really did a number on our great local pharmacies, mm-hmm. which I, you know, I have a great affinity for.
Usually have a dairy bar
yes.
somewhere up front.
Have a dairy bar,
get some
right.
snacks.
And just like, I don't know, there's not a nostalgia just for nostalgia's sake, but a nostalgia for efficiency's sake, too. I still like, and there's a few in our area for sure, and I still, as the old folks used to say, trade with them. Do business with them.
So take in some furs.
Right. I trade with those folks. But they, yes, the temptation and the convenience of the drive-through pharmacy and where the health insurance is accepted, that moved a lot of people. Well, then, you know, they developed the Model T, and soon they developed faster cars. And I wonder if it's not the fact that if those pharmacies don't get into doing this, which I don't know the legal ramifications on. I'm sure they're going to. You can get prescriptions through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get all the, you know, people are taking narcotic drugs or something like that? Probably not. But if there's a company out there, if Americans chose to go from walking in to a place and getting an ice cream cone while they waited for their prescription to drive through and stay in their vehicle, now if given the option of not even having to drive through, mm-hmm. just having to show up at the house, looks like, you know, I mean, it might be a harbinger here.
And as for whether Amazon's, you know, ready to roll, they said that they've already got licenses to ship prescriptions in 49 states, and they've even already developed their own operational system to organize patient and pharmaceutical data. And yesterday when the news came out that they bought this online pharmacy startup for under $1 billion, said the stock prices for Rite Aid, Walgreens, and CVS fell dramatically, losing approximately $11 billion in combined market value. And then as we talk about medical marijuana entering the pharmaceutical world, you got to wonder whether Amazon's going to jump on that too and start, you know, mailing out CBD oils and things
okay,
of that nature.
Wait. And then what about in the states where they have the recreational legal? Will there be, you know, a system where, you know how in digital advertising, but because you went to this website, right, you went and looked at a tractor implement, and then you're on another site, and there's an ad for that tractor implement on that other site, and it followed. I wonder if there'll be a situation where the people are getting the marijuana delivered, the recreational marijuana, and then they're going to get some ad push from the delivery restaurant for the people that... just marketing, right? Just marketing.
Smart marketing.
All right. We'll take some calls when we get back at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, reminder here, we're in the midst of the Summer Better Than Others prize giveaway. And I do need to say congratulations, as we have a couple winners so far, and we'll talk about that when we get back. Who's won so far, what they've won. And talk about right now, I'll tell you this, Goldfinger's, both locations, the one on Dolphin Street, the one in Saraland, have registration boxes. You walk in once a day, y'all be cool. Once a day, put your name in the registration box. We'll draw for a weekly prize winner of $50, and then you're the grand prize drawing that happens later next month for $5,500 worth of goodies. And more details, of course, easy to find on our website and our Facebook page, our Instagram page as well. Just look for the Summer Better Than Others prize giveaway. All right, coming right back. More of Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Friday. We get to the reasoning for out of the entire Aerosmith library, playing probably what would have to be one of my least favorite songs from Aerosmith.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, but you know, that's we'll get to this in just a second. Do want to give folks heads up once again. From now through next week, your chance to stop by Goldfinger's, put your name in the registration box in the Summer Better Than Others contest. You know, for the previous week, and when we say weeks, they they go over a weekend, mm-hmm. but they're a seven-day period of time. Congratulations to Sandra Crenshaw from Robertsdale, who won at Old Time Feed. All right, very good. So Sandra's in, Jeff Stouter's in, and it could be you, the next person in for the big prize giveaway.
Yeah, don't forget two locations this That's time right. for Goldfingers, the Goldfingers in Saraland, and also the one on Dolphin Street.
All right, and if we get a second, too, I do want to update y'all on what's happening in my neighborhood. Because you and I, during the news break, we're talking about latest notifications from the Nextdoor app, which you know we've said Nextdoor app is like Twitter for old people. Some goings on in my neighborhood. We'll get to that in just a second. But a couple things here from the text line I think are worth noting here. This unnamed texter said about Jeffrey. I think this is really telling. Maybe the person thought this deeply about what they texted in, or they're just goofing, but there's a lot of truth to this. Jeffrey should have been, the picture should have been Jeffrey playing an Xbox with the store closing in the background.
Oh.
How much serious? Great text, because how much has digital entertainment, not physical toys, and I know they sold games and all that in there, but how much of that? You don't have to go buy a toy. I mean, I'm thinking about my son, my 7-year-old, he plays with toys a good bit, and then games and digital, but it's like 50-50, where, when, you know, I imagine 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it would be probably 80% toys, 20% video games.
Yeah, and I haven't, you know, being 26 years old, unless I'm with family, I'm not hanging out with kids that much these days, so
right.
I don't
that's
see
a good,
really...
That's a luxury. Hey, enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't see what's going on normally, but last week when I was in Branson, I was with my four girl cousins from Pennsylvania, one of them a freshman in college, one entering her senior year in high school, but two younger cousins right. that I have, and all of their gaming, and they were, you know, they didn't spend the whole time gaming,
right?
But they spent a lot of time gaming, and it was all on their phones. And that's just something that even I, who grew up playing,
right? You
Game
played
Boy,
on it, but yeah, some kind of actual video game unit. That's what I'm saying. So if it's people developing apps and games that'll go straight to a phone or a tablet, there's less chances for a physical brick and mortar retailer
mm-hmm.
to do business selling things,
yeah.
Right?
And I think a lot of it, like we were just discussing, is Amazon, just because it's so much easier now. And when you think of toys and buying for the holiday season, I think of people fighting in the aisles, shouldering each other out of the way.
Tickle Me Elmo stuff and people beating each other up for cabbage patches in the old days.
And paying inflated prices because they know that you're coming for it.
Yes.
It's just too easy nowadays to go online and order those gifts and have them delivered in 2 days and going ahead and wrapping it up and getting ready for the holidays.
Yeah, Jared had texted in. Obviously, he's concerned about Jeffrey the giraffe. He said, do you think Jeffrey prefers long necks when he's drinking?
Probably now.
Yeah, you think he's drinking.
He might not have drank until now Toys R Us went out of business.
Picked up the habit. We also talked about getting into the business, Amazon getting into the pharmacy business. Tony says, sure, sounds like people better get more locking mailboxes.
Mm-hmm.
Probably correct. That is, you know, you look at, and Tony obviously has a business mind, because you look at one news story and you can just lament things, or the business mind goes, I can lament it, but how? Where will be the next business opportunity there?
And speaking of the Nextdoor app, that's a post that I see almost weekly, or maybe every other week, of people losing their packages to either thieves or just wrong door deliveries.
Yes.
That's something that Amazon has talked about in the past, delivering a box that is locked and only your carrier can open that box.
Well, this is the thing. Remember what we talked about a year ago or something? It would be like a locking package door, mm-hmm. like, so but the delivery person would have a key,
right?
And when they first described it, it was like it was going to be a portal into your house, but I think more like it's going to be one of those a V-shaped container
mm-hmm.
that can swivel in or out. So they unlock their side, they put the package in, they close it and lock it. They couldn't get into your home. You know, this big metal box would, you know, swing out, you put the stuff in there, and then mm-hmm. you push it back into the house. Installing those may be another business opportunity going forward. So, yeah, just keep looking for the opportunity. In amongst these stories, there's always going to be, when one thing's shutting down, there's an opportunity. Speaking of which, back to Toys R Us before we wrap it up here. Story out of North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina. Toys R Us stores across country closing, blah, 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 blah. They said a anonymous person purchased $1 million worth of the remaining toys at the Triangle Town Center location to donate to local children. Now, that's not a local story, but I think it's a really good story. I love the anonymous people doing good by other people. They came in. They said they got the 30% off sale and the 80% off sale, so they spent $1 million, probably got obviously well over that worth of toys with that discount, and then gave them, donating them to children right there in the Raleigh, North Carolina area.
That's a great story.
That's good stuff.
How many Tickle Me Elmos can $1 million buy?
Like seven. if it's during the during the Christmas season when all the kids want them, you get like seven. All right, so right before we wrap up here, because we will go to Laura Ingraham Show in just a second, I do want to note that my note here from next door, mm-hmm. you've had some, you started off the week with all kind of goings on. I just want to add this, that they says, there's a man that matches others' descriptions who's going door to door in the blank, blank, blank neighborhood area. I told him to stay off my property. I didn't call police because he didn't do anything, but he was asking about flower beds and had no tools or visible means of transportation. How do they identify this person? He has one crutch. So I was wondering, is it tobacco or alcohol or something like that? You're saying,
everybody has
I think they actually mean he just has one crutch.
Oh, okay. That means one injured foot.
Right.
Or one tired man.
I was trying to figure out what the man's crutch was.
But. Next Door app. I'll have a lot more next week. We'll talk about my Next Door app.
Very good. Y'all have a great one, and I'll see you back. I'll be off for a couple days, but I'll see you back here next week.